This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Willard and Dibs.
I walked over here supposedly as a tough guy. He just told a story. He just told a story that just said, Ron, have you done that?
On 95.7 The Game.
I only just did half the show for the last 30 seconds. Lucas, what's the hell the matter with you back there? What are you doing?
You gotta wait for your liner to cue you in.
You're over here freaking out because I'm not on headset, so I put the headset on, and then yet you let me do 8 minutes of radio without telling me that we're not even on the air?
You're hot.
All right, thanks, Lucas. All right, good stuff. Okay, everybody. We're at Thrive City getting ready for the Warriors. What the people here heard that you all didn't is that we're giving away tickets to a Warriors game.
Yeah.
In about a half hour. We're doing it again at 4:30. 5:30 during that window, we'll qualify another listener for the trip to Vegas, which comes with tickets to see the Scorpions. We got all kinds of fun and frivolity waiting for you if you come see us out at Thrive City getting ready for the Warrior game tonight. But right now, speaking of fun and frivolity, we get to talk to Mark Schlereth, one of our favorites. Out on the River Islands guest line, Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereth, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Hey, Stink, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys doing?
We are so fantastic right now, and obviously our entire sports area is relieved after Sunday night. But it wasn't without its moments that made everybody feel a little wonky about the whole thing. What's your review of the 49er performance on Sunday night?
Well, listen, I mean, they got themselves a victory. You know, like, I look at them and I think, great things because ultimately, what are they sitting at 4-4? They're whatever you want to call it. They're tied for first place. But Arizona has first place because they beat them head to head. But come on, you're getting McCaffrey back. At least it looks like you're getting McCaffrey back, which is going to completely change what you do in the red zone, what you do offensively. It's going to help the defense, obviously, because of the complementary nature of scoring points in the red zone as opposed to kicking field goals and how that's going to affect your football team. I know you're probably not getting back, you know, Hargrave, and you're not getting back, you know, Hufanga, and you're not probably getting back, you know, we know you're not getting back Ayuk and stuff, but this is a big, big component. And, you know, one of the things that I looked at, like, today on my show Breakfast Ball is just the time from snap to release of Brock Purdy and how this year he is one of the slowest snap to release guys. Now, part of that is he's holding on the ball, but he doesn't have that instant outlet. He doesn't have that back out of the backfield that is open automatically. And then the opportunity to get that guy, the ball out of the backfield, or you motion him out or you do whatever, get him the ball and let him have it in space and what he does for you. So just that alone is going to totally, you know, morph that offense, and they've developed a couple of the young backs, you know, in Mason and
Garendo. Isaac Garendo.
Yeah. Garendo. Yeah. Garendo, who's, like, got all kinds of speed and power for 220. That dude is electric. So, like, I think it's a good, like, I think ultimately it's a good thing coming off the bye week. I just feel like they're – they kind of got them right where they want them. And then, you know, to watch George Kittle do what he did on National Tight Ends Day, a holiday that he created, is like, that is, it's just, that is absolute boss. Like, hey, let me create a holiday, and then let me dominate the holiday. Like, you don't get more boss than that.
Right, and like tight ends across the league also were equally boss, which was kind of cool to see all of them. And then George on his own day kind of closed the show with that big performance. Stink, when you look at Brock Purdy through eight games, and yeah, they're 4-4, and the quarterback ultimately rises and falls with the overall record. But what do you make of Brock Purdy through his first half of the year so far?
I'm a big Brock Purdy fan. I think the guy is really big time legit. And you know, it's, you watch him play the game, man. The thing that blows me away is, like, he's got great feet. He takes great sets, and he gets through progressions. Like, when you watch him, he'll just roll through progression, and he instantly has an ability to eliminate things. Nope, nope, nope. Yes. And, like, he'll do it in, I mean, he'll get through three, four progressions in 2 seconds. And it's amazing to watch him do that. And your knowledge and understanding of defense, your knowledge and understanding of, you know, it, most importantly, like, a lot of people think about, oh, the routes and, you know, the route combination and stuff. No, the most important thing is to instantly recognize what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. You already know, and a lot of quarterbacks don't process this, but you already know what you've got. Like, you can tag each route individually what you're going to get, but to see what the defense is doing instantly and going, I don't like that combination. I'm getting to the backside. I'm getting to number three. And so I'm a huge fan of the way he plays and the knowledge and the speed with which he processes. I think he's a big time player. And you know, you get players back and get players healthy, and good things are going to happen.
Mark Slareth with us on Willard and Dibbs. Stink, I wonder if you'd weigh in on something we were talking about earlier. Look, I understand it's not the biggest need in the world, but if I'm the 49ers with all the wide receivers who are available here at the deadline, I'd have gotten in on that. With Ayuk out, knowing the injury history of Debo and the youth of Ricky Pearsall, and now the price of Diontae Johnson today, which was next to nothing, I would have gotten in on that. What's your thought on whether or not the Niners should have been a buyer for a wide receiver?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I don't think offensively, like, ultimately, like, I get the Diontae Johnson thing. He went to Baltimore. Well, I look at Baltimore, they've got the worst pass defense in football. Like, offense isn't their issue. And so, you know, it's one of those deals where if I'm San Francisco, I'm really looking at, hey, why have we failed on the defensive side of the ball? Why have we not been able to consistently get off the football field? Why have we given up long drives at the end of halves and at the end of games? Why have we let teams that we've got our foot on the throat get back into it like we did Dallas on Sunday night? Like, that was the one that I would look at. You know, and there are a lot of people that talk about, hey, do you have an elite level corner, or do you go get another corner, another DB? And those, that's all great. You know, there's an old saying that one corner can, you know, take one receiver out of the game, but a great pass rush takes all the receivers out of the game. And, you know, that would be an area, if I'm San Francisco and I'm John Lynch, that I would look at the defensive side of the ball, because I think offensively, and I hear what you're saying about injuries and stuff, but I think offensively, that team is poised to explode when they get, you know, most of their weapons back and some of those young guys start getting exposed and start playing a little bit.
I agree, Mark, and I look at the defense against Dallas, and I wonder what your thoughts are about those last couple of drives where it felt like they were playing the old prevent defense, which many people think prevents you only from winning. When you looked at the defense in the first three quarters as opposed to the fourth quarter, what changed?
Yeah, you know, it's philosophy. I think more than anything else, you start playing and saying, hey, we're going to give up. You know, we're going to give up underneath throws. We're going to give up yardage, and we're going to exchange yardage for time. And so we'll let you complete a bunch of passes, make tackles, and let that clock tick. Like, and I think that's, you know, I think it's just a philosophical approach that most teams have. You know, it's really like you get into this kind of passive, let's give up a bunch of 7-8 yard completions and keep the clock running, right? And so that's kind of the philosophical approach, and you're really exchanging yardage for time. And it's kind of a philosophical thing, but you know, it's funny, and I think everybody can relate to this, what I'm about to say, is when you're much better at something, let's say it's an athletic skill, maybe it's playing hoops or maybe it's racquetball or whatever, you know, tennis, pickleball, whatever it is, and you're much better than the person you're playing. And then you go into that relaxed mode where you're just trying to, hey, let's have some fun, let's make a game of it. And that person gets a little bit of momentum, a little bit of confidence, starts playing better. And then it's really hard to flip the switch back on. I think we've all been there a time or two where, you know, you're competing with somebody who's not nearly as good as you, and you kind of take some time off, and the next thing you know, you're like, oh, shoot, I'm about ready to get beat by this guy. And I think that happens a lot with the kind of quote-unquote prevent type of defense, or let's just bend but don't break. And I just never understand, like, let's take our foot off the gas. To me, how have we been playing? What have we been playing? And let's just continue to play the snot out of it, right? They haven't gotten us. They haven't gotten us at all. And we're so afraid of giving up the one big explosive play that what we end up doing is just giving up a bunch of plays that end up being explosive over time. So, I don't like the philosophy. I understand it, but it doesn't mean I like it.
Stink, when you look at the NFC as a whole, because you sound very bullish on the second half of the season for the 49ers, if I made you make a little mini list, how many teams are you going to name before the 49ers in terms of what you think is the likelihood of them getting all the way to the Super Bowl?
Over the 49ers, I would take right now probably the Lions. I think the Lions are the best team in football right now.
Yep.
And then after the Lions, I would probably take – this is like – I'd probably take Philly because I think they're that talented.
Oh.
And in the last 4 weeks, Jalen Hurts hasn't turned the ball over, which has been their biggest issue. They're starting to kind of hum, and they've got all kinds of talent, really strong offensive line, all that kind of stuff. And then I'm trying to think the Washington's playing really good. I don't think they're at the talent level they need to be offensively. I think they're really talented and they're really good. But defensively, I don't think they are. They're playing exceptionally hard. But I don't think I'd take San Francisco. I don't think I'd take Washington over San Francisco. I'm probably missing one team.
What about Green Bay? What about Green Bay?
Okay, so Jordan Love got hurt again. He hurt his groin this time. He has not been real judicious with the football. Like, he's turned the ball over a bunch. And there's just something about that matchup from a physicality standpoint that I'd probably – now I'm assuming, again, that the 49ers get healthy. Like, that's a big assumption. Like, right now I'd take Green Bay. But I'm assuming toward the end of the season, they get healthy, they get McCaffrey back, they start to hum. There would be at the end of the season, if all things kind of remain the same and San Francisco gets healthy, I would assume it's probably Philly and the Lions that I would give the nod to.
And that's fair. I mean, the Lions, I think, are the best example in football right now of playing that complementary football where the offense and the defense are kind of in lockstep. And you look at the Niners, and you mentioned Isaac Garendo and what he's done. How much is it kind of McCaffrey, not McCaffrey or bust for them to go to the Super Bowl, but just how critical is he in all facets of the offense to get them to get to that top echelon in the NFC?
He's huge, and it's not just running the ball, you know, and it's not just receiving. It's personnel groups. So now all of a sudden something they call, like, 21 personnel, as you guys know, is two back, one tight end. It's the fullback, you know, for you guys to be Juszczyk and McCaffrey. But all of a sudden you can get into 21 pony. So now all of a sudden you can get Mason as your main guy, and McCaffrey's playing, you know, motioning out, playing wide receiver. Or you can get Garendo in there to be your main running back. And now all of a sudden the two of those guys. So it just gives you another big time personnel grouping that a defense has to go, how do we match this? What do we do? And because of the interchangeable nature of Debo and McCaffrey and the things that both of those guys can do, it just makes it a nightmare when you try to match up and you have to make a decision You know, how are we going to go about this? And then all of a sudden, if you get, you know, if you're getting raked over the coals, now we've got to make a change on how we're going to do that. And so it just presents a big problem. Detroit does it a lot when they decide to go with Montgomery and Gibbs in the same backfield, you know, and Atlanta does it when they do Robinson and Tyler Allgeier in the same backfield. And it's just another one of those wrinkles that you've got to spend time trying to defend, and they can run a bunch of different stuff out of that based upon the versatility of Christian McCaffrey. So, yeah, it makes a big deal.
Mark Slareth is with us here on Willard and Dibs. We're live at Thrive City. Mark, this is always sort of a difficult needle to thread with the Niner fan base because expectations are high, and therefore every play call by Kyle Shanahan is scrutinized. I know you know the Shanahan system very well. It was interesting. Trayvon Diggs went on a podcast yesterday and talked about how the defense was in knots because of Shanahan's play calls. Can you just shed some light for our listeners about what he does that's special and then sort of what your review of specifically this year is?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously they haven't had the weapons, so but they still had a ton of production. And, you know, one of the things I always say about their run game, and I talked to coaches all over. I talked to a coach last week about their run game. And, you know, it was Arizona's coach, Jonathan Gannon, said San Francisco's run game is what everybody studies. It's the best run game in football. Miami has some, you know, Miami has, you know, a lot of those same principles. But the way they can take one play and just attack a different aspect of that play. So, for instance, let's take a play handoff, and your defensive end has to defend against an offensive tackle blocking them. And then it's a tight end blocking him. And then it's two tight ends blocking him. And then it's the tight end that looks like he's blocking him, but he arc releases and the fullback loads him and hits him in the head. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's the tight end pitching inside and somebody else pinning him, an offensive, you know, like a wide receiver pinning him, and they get the pin-pull kind of stuff. And then so all of a sudden you're basically running one play, and for nine of us, it's the exact same play every time we run it. But for two guys, they're operating in a different realm where they're blocking the edge different. But for the defense, it looks like seven different plays, eight different plays. And so it's one play for us, but it's eight for them. And so now they're confused about, well, what are they doing here and how are they getting this and what are they getting? Oh, we got the two tight ends. Well, last time we both got blocked by them, but this time neither of us are getting blocked by them. And it just becomes one of those things where it gets you to play on your heels. The other thing they do is their motion and their shifts are so good that they gain real estate. And what I mean by that is, let's say you're on the backside of a play and you're a guard and you're big and fat like me, and you got to get up to a linebacker that can really run. So we're going to motion across the formation ever so slightly. We're going to snap the ball right as the linebacker takes one step to his left, and now we come back to the right-hand side, and that one step gave me 8 inches of real estate where I can block him now as opposed to him running by me. Just little nuanced things like that that are the difference between 4-yard runs and 40-yard runs. And San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan do it better and coach it better than anybody in football.
Mark Slareth there on 95.7 The Game, and you mentioned being a guard, and I'm wondering a couple things. One, when is National Guards Day? And secondly, what do you make of the rookie guard, Dominic Pooney, and how he's gone from draftee to starter in this complex run game?
Yeah, you know what? He's been impressive. And, you know, I haven't spent a ton of time focusing on him, you know, because when you're doing games, like I try to watch pretty much everything that I can. But when you're doing a game, you're kind of an inch wide to mile deep on the team that you're preparing for. So I haven't had San Francisco, but what I've seen of him, he looks really good. He's coming off the ball. He's doing a lot of good things really well. So, I've enjoyed watching him, but listen, man, that's the system. They do a great job with the system. I think Forster's a hell of a football coach, and so they just have, like, everybody is coaching it one way. And I think one of the cool things is Kyle talks about it the same way the O-line coach talks about it, the same way Bobby Turner, the running back coach, talks about it. Like, they're all on the same page, and so you're never getting any mixed messages when you're in a system like that.
Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes. This football season, we're talking with Odyssey Insider Mark Schlereth. Stink is with us here on Willard and Dibs. Hey, Stink, what did you used to do during your bye week? What does this do for guys?
I used to have surgery during my bye week. So that's what I did. I mean, I didn't go anywhere. I had surgery pretty much every bye week. I think there was one bye week in my 6 years in Denver where I didn't have surgery.
So, oh my gosh.
I was just thirsting and trying to get healthy. That's what I was doing.
Sounds like fun, Mark.
Yeah, sounds great. No, but what, like, we've noticed, especially, and maybe this is just recent years, but the Niners have seemingly always had a very mid-season bye week, and they have used it to do something that has them come back out and look like a completely different football team. And maybe it's cheating this time because when they come back, McCaffrey might be on the team. But what can that really do for a team? What extra stuff do they plug in that you think maybe makes them improve at such a level?
Yeah, it's just being fresh, getting away from it for a minute. Having the bye week in the middle of the season is great for them. It's super. I mean, it's super. You get the victory. You get the 500, 4-4. You get a bye week. You get to come back fresh. Hopefully some guys heal up and get right and then can stay right for the rest of the year. So, like, more than anything, it's just being healthy. Is like, when you're healthy and relatively healthy as you can be as a football player, but when you get that and you get rolling, you know, you get this renewed energy, if you will, and getting McCaffrey back will be, you know, will be, it'll bring excitement to the football team. So, you know, the other thing is like, you've got the fast track to win that division. I mean, you got everything in front of you. So I look at that like that's energizing as well.
Mark, we love having you on. We thank you so much as always, man. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good, guys. Have a good one. Take care.
There it is. That's Stink. Mark Schlereth, Odyssey NFL Insider. Mark Schlereth, host of the Stink and Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious.
Yeah, and it's interesting the way you laid that out about the Niners after the bye, because they tend to be really, really good. And if you think about this year after the bye, they've got 9 more games. And now the latest news is that no setbacks, and McCaffrey should be ready for Tampa Bay, which is exciting. And even if he's not ready for a full rack of plays, you think about McCaffrey and Mason, if he's good to go. Garendo's been spectacular. Now that room is getting full and good again, and if Juwan can come back and Debo's healthy and you got Ricky starting to come into his own, that room looks good. George Kittle already bragging about 4 tight ends being up and active on National Tight End Day. That room looks good. The O-line, all 5 offensive linemen played every snap on Sunday. That room looks good. Brock Purdy has been at least a B, if not a B-plus all year. He's been good. So you start thinking about an offense, and they are going to be whole, other than Brandon Ayuk.
Yep.
And they're going to be humming down the stretch.
And his answer about the NFC, I think, you know, no matter what the frustrations are about the Niners and what their situation is in the standings, he's right. I don't think many people would get to a third or a fourth team before they get to the Niners in saying who they think has got a shot to still go to the Super Bowl. The Lions, sure, let's set them apart right now. But from the Vikings to the Commanders to the Packers to anyone else.
Yep.
The Philly he threw in there. The Niners, I think everything is still very much in front of them. Okay, a few things coming up next. First of all, we want to run this test, okay? Time for you to line up the phone lines. 888-957-9570, and you need to put your chip into one of two circles. Jonathan Kuminga stock up or Jonathan Kuminga stock down. Where are you on Kuminga. 888-957-9570. We want to take your calls. We want to talk this out. We also want to send you to a Warrior game. So immediately coming up next, Warriors-Hawks, November 20th. Great way to lead into the Thanksgiving holiday. We're giving away a pair of tickets next. Do not call now, but you can save the contest number to your phone, 415-523-4652. 415-523-4652. Don't call now, but that's the number you're going to want to have ready coming up next. We're also sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Springwater, Willard and Dibbs.
Now, back to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, we are having problems, is what we're... You know what I mean? Like, lost in translation right now.
It's a false start.
But who is it on?
You.
Why? I was told you're hot. And it wasn't just some girl walking by either.
Yeah, well...
I was told you're hot.
That means
I don't hear that very often in the other areas of my life.
That means don't talk.
No, it doesn't. You're hot means go time.
No, that's when you say go.
Thank you, Lucas.
No, you haven't said go to us one time in 3 years.
I figured you'd hear the whiner and know that you talk after the whiner.
Nobody says go.
Now back to Willard and Dibbs.
I can't see you. Why would you say you're hot if we're not ready to roll yet? Wait and say it when we're ready to roll. No? I'm like Garoppolo over here, man. These play calls suck.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm like Shanahan, and I mean, if you could lip read on YouTube, there'd be a lot of MFing going on because this MFer keeps jumping the snap count.
Well, listen, all I do, I'm a product of the system, and I go out there and I run the plays that are called. And if they're not called correctly, then you know what? We're going to commit penalties.
I look at Cowing and Pearsall, who are doing the, no, you move up, no, I move up, and they're talking to each other as the snap goes off, and I'm Shanahan going, dude, just line up.
Don't throw a straight at Jacob Cowing. He wasn't even on the field when that happened.
You're the Jacob Cowing of the station right now.
Oh, I'm that fast?
Or Chris Conley,
Same thing. Too late.
Ronnie Bell.
Anyway.
Bobby, Ricky, and Mark. Thank you.
Speaking of Twitch and YouTube, you can go there right now and you can see our big fancy backdrop.
Pretty nice.
It's fancy. We're at Thrive City, and we fancy, like for real. So check it out. We are we're promoting the All-Star Game in February, which is going to be incredible. It's a crisp but beautiful day out here. We're getting ready for Warriors and Pelicans times two. We'll be out here again tomorrow. So check it all out, twitch.tv/957thegame, youtube.com/957thegame. It's all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. And before we get into the conversation that we're going to have, and we want to hear from you, are you stock up or stock down on Jonathan Kuminga? 888-957-9570. Before we do that, it is time. It is time to send one of you to the game. Not this game, but one of the other games. November 20th, the Warriors will host the Hawks. And it's time to give away our first of two pairs of tickets. We'll do this again in exactly an hour. So if you don't win now, keep the number in your back pocket, and we'll do it again in an hour. All you need to do right now is line up 415-523-4652. 415-523-4652 and be caller 5. Release the hound.
That's it.
You don't even need to be smart. You don't need to know sports. You don't need to know what "you're hot" means in radio. You just need to punch the right numbers into your phone and get lucky. So, caller 5, good luck. And thank you for listening. And we'll do it again in 1 hour and send some people to Chase Center for a Dubs game. And with any luck, the one you go to, Steph Curry's going to play in.
Yeah, you hope. And, you know, he's out for two games to be sure, which is today and tomorrow. And then, you know, the thinking is maybe he's back by the weekend and able to play, but you never know. And I heard Steiny talking earlier today with Evan on Steiny and Guru about the number of games for Steph Curry. And Steiny was saying, like, yeah, ideally, you know, he'd be there for 70 of 82. And I thought, yeah, you know, for me, the number's closer to 60, 65. And he kind of said the same thing about, like, the number of games. And so, you know, you wonder about the games he's going to miss. And Steiny said, you just want to go 500 in those games that he misses. And I look back at the last 3 years, and when he's missed games, they are 25 and 27. So barely below 500 when Steph doesn't play. So you look at the next two and you think you should be able to split these two with New Orleans, even without Steph Curry.
You would think. I mean, I don't, I'm almost sort of like put off by the fact that everybody's going into these just kind of like prayers up that we can split. Why not win both? The Pelicans have not been good so far this year. I know they've got some fancy names on their team, and the Warriors are down at least tonight. I don't know about Wiggins tomorrow night, but at least tonight you're down your top two scorers. I get that, but these are home basketball games. Let's go one at a time. There's no reason why they can't win both.
Of course. I mean, they're allowed to, as you like to say.
That is true.
And,
I checked.
You know, they're certainly allowed to win both. They're also allowed to lose both.
Yes,
and,
they are.
You know, you look at where this team is, and it's not just that Steph is out. Your second best player so far this year is also out, Andrew Wiggins, and he's been great through three games, and he won't play tonight. We don't know about tomorrow, and so it becomes more difficult when you start thinking about no Melton, no Wiggins, no Steph, and I think that they're going to activate Pat Spencer, so he'll play, and Lindy Waters will be up, and so now you're looking at a lot of guys who we aren't normally used to seeing as Warriors who are going to be playing.
Yep, but let's see what it looks like. You got a bevy of three-point shooters out there. Stay hot, young men. Go out there and knock some down. You can win the basketball game. So we'll see what that looks like.
Do you know what the number is right now?
Ooh,
the spread.
That's a good question. I have not looked at it. I would bet...
Carter, I'm going to go ahead and say this. Go on game show music and see if that's a good cue.
Carter, you're hot!
Yeah, exactly. Scut-da-da-da! Scut-da-da-da!
Okay.
Warriors tonight hosting the Pelicans. No Steph, no Wiggins, and no D'Anthony Melton. Dibs and Willard live in the plaza. Dibs wearing five layers and a beanie. Mark, what is the spread?
Lord, you look like you're going on a ski trip.
I'm freezing.
It's not that cold out here.
You have hair.
It's brisk.
When you're bald, you get cold.
Too. It's just not on your head. It's all over your face.
Get
Billy
out
Joel.
Of here you know? With that scouting report of my hair.
Anyway.
You're not wrong.
I think the Warriors are still favored. I have no idea. I mean, early season NBA.
That's why I asked you.
Yeah, Warriors by 2.5.
Carter, I don't know if you can see this, but give him the grandy.
It's going to be on a delay.
New Orleans favored by 1.5. The Pelicans.
Okay.
Favored at Golden State. Yep. I know you.
I mean, we
love them home dogs.
We do love that home dog.
Yeah.
Hey, you're giving me all kinds of ideas, too.
Yeah.
You give me some ideas, especially after I made all that money on the Steelers last night.
You had the under.
Hey, I had them both.
Did that stay under?
No, it did not.
Yeah.
No, it went over. It went over.
Well,
but
I mean,
I knew to put a little extra chicken on faith.
Danny Dimes. They had no business not covering that game.
Sure they did.
Malik Nabers, catch the ball, bro.
Stop it.
Third down, get the dropsies.
You bet on the Giants, you get what you get.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm no longer hot.
Hey, listen, I don't want to make this about three games, because it's not about three games.
All right.
Nothing is ever about three games. I was actually going back. Somebody sent me a conversation you and I were having in May. And my quote was something along the lines of, I am not bullish on the future of Jonathan Kuminga if the question you're asking me is he going to be a star? I'm not trying to fade to Kuminga. I'm not trying to knock the young man down and say he can't this or he can't that. But I do feel like because of two things, draft position and leaping ability, the bar for him has been set at star. And the conversation surrounding a future contract has been at an astronomical number. And when I look at all of that as the backdrop, I go, no. If you're asking me if Jonathan can be good, yes, Jonathan Kuminga can be good. And so maybe this is unfair, but the backdrop that we have set and he has set for his future, to me, and again, it's not just about these three games. I am, I'm not out on Jonathan. I'm down on Jonathan Kuminga. And at minimum, these first three games, I would say, are a discouraging start. Because it is my belief that in 2024, if you want to be a wing player that is highly paid in the National Basketball Association, you better be able to hit a three. I think the Warriors as an organization decided that this offseason. We better be able to shoot a lot of threes, and a bunch of them better go in. And when Jonathan Kuminga shoots a three, I tighten up. He is 1 for 9 this year, that's a very small sample. But right now, I am not comfortable with the idea of Jonathan and a big future contract for the Golden State Warriors.
Well, for me, it's too early to really make that determination, and I do think that he gets a little bit of a bad rap based on three games, and I hear a lot of people, and you know, yourself and Grandy and Lucas on our show thread, who are ready to give up on Jonathan Kuminga after three games. And I understand that, you know, he is in year number 4 and you're looking to see that progression. And I'm thinking about other people in his draft class, and I'm just looking across the numbers, and he's got a higher three-point percentage than Cade Cunningham, higher than Jalen Suggs, higher than Josh Giddey, and these are all players who are more widely thought of as good shooters. And I know Jonathan Kuminga doesn't shoot it as often, but I look at where he is in his trajectory, year 4, never having played college. He played for the G League Ignite, and he's a guy who is improving. He's gotten better, and yes, he's off to a very slow start as a three-point shooter, and maybe this team is not where he ultimately will fit as an NBA player. And I'm also not ready to give him the money that he reportedly wanted, which is a max contract. And you look at other contracts that other members of his draft class got, and I think that some of them were also grossly overpaid. And so, yeah, he's in a spot where you got to go out there and prove it. You have 82 games to do it. So for me, it's not like stock up, stock down. If I look at it through three games, yeah, stock down, but not so far that I want to sell the stock.
Again, I wouldn't say this if I wasn't already feeling that way. There are a couple of words that keep coming up. You used the word fit, and I don't necessarily think right now that Jonathan Kuminga is a good fit. And here's another word. Every time right now, and last year, by the way, and I won't say every time, I guess, but a lot of the time, when I'm watching Kuminga play, whatever he's doing feels forced. And that's my concern. That's my concern. My concern is that last year, when the Shams tweet came out about how Jonathan has lost faith in the organization and in Steve Kerr, immediately it was like, oh, more minutes for you. That felt forced. When he shoots a three, it feels forced. It looks like when he's got the ball, everyone's looking at him like, okay, are you going to do your thing now? And what exactly is your thing? If Jonathan was able to run the floor and finish with his incredible athleticism and have that be happening more within the flow of what the Warriors are trying to do, I'd probably feel really, really good about it. But it doesn't. It doesn't feel that way, because it feels like there's two things happening at once. There's the Warriors game, and then there's the let's see what Jonathan can do game. And there are too many times where they're handing him the ball and making him a focal point of the offense to create a shot, and it's just not, he's not very good at it. He's a wonderful finisher. If all of that can happen within the flow, great. Let's see it. But I just think that they're in a pickle right now, because they've got to make a decision on him, and they're down right now a couple scorers, and so a role is being thrown to him that I don't think he's very good at, and everyone's looking at him like, you're going to be able to do this? Do you want $240 million? That's not a great sideshow for the Warriors to be dealing with this year, in my opinion.
Well, then maybe you could create things for him to where what he can do well, you can have as a part of your offense. Because what I see from their offense is not anything that is really Kuminga-centric. And there are things, and you just mentioned it, things that he does very well. So why don't we build that into the offense, especially now that Steph Curry is out, where you have some sets that are Kuminga-centric. What does Jonathan Kuminga do really, really well in your offense? Well, he could probably get the ball on the wing and score off the dribble and attack the rim and, you know, create his own. So if that's what he can do, then why don't you create some offensive sets that would highlight that? Because ultimately, you're going to play him and you want him to do well. And I do think that he wants to do well. I don't think that he's out there trying to, you know, mail it in or trying to just do his own thing.
Yeah, I don't think he's a problem.
No, but so I think for you as an offense, it's up to you to try to create things that make him successful to where it's going to help your team.
Okay, but then let's discuss why that hasn't happened yet to this point. Like, I don't think that, you know, you say I don't think he's out there, like, causing a problem. I don't think the coaching staff is sitting here going, watch this. Let's not do anything for Jonathan and make him try to do it all on his own. Of course not. They're trying to put him in his best position to succeed. And I've heard people pretty close to the organization say that Jonathan Kuminga is not, he's just not a natural out there. He's got a lot of raw skill, but he's just not a natural. And I know he's still young, both in the league and by age. I get all of that. But then again, this is pro sports. How many years do you get to be raw? Like, this is, it's too many. That's the only thing that I would say. It's not even really a criticism. It's just not, you don't get to be raw for 4 or 5 years. You have got, and you can say, well, they haven't given him his time. Well, at least starting through a third of the way last year, they have. And I would argue that at this point, where we sit here today, I would have loved to see a more polished basketball player based on the amount of minutes he's logged.
Well, and if you look at his draft class, he has logged the 17th most minutes a game. So, and he's the number 7 overall pick. So there are many other players who've gotten more on-court time than he has.
Sure.
And you add to that calculus the fact that he was a raw, inexperienced player coming in. So this is not Corey Kispert out of Gonzaga, who played at a high college level for a long time and hit the ground running.
But you know why. Most of the front half of the lottery is going to teams where all they want to do is develop. Jonathan Kuminga was drafted by a team that 2 years later won a ring.
At the same time, you can't then expect him to be more developed if you're not going to play him. You don't get to have it both ways.
No, but now they have. Like, again, is he a young player? Yes, but like...
He hasn't played that much basketball relative to his draft class.
Okay, relative to his draft class, but relative to life, he has. He has played more basketball than what someone who's as raw as him should look like, in my opinion. Like, he has played well over 200 basketball games.
Yep.
So to say at this point that the Warriors have not given him minutes, I don't think we can ride with that anymore. Like, whether it's
relative... It depends on what you think is, you know, and again, like, what does it take for a player with that level of inexperience to go from where he was to where you want him to be? And that number, it varies. And you just don't know what that number is. And I'm looking at overall minutes. He's played 4,587 minutes, which is 14th in his draft class. And the guys who were ahead of him, even Cade Cunningham, who missed an entire year due to injury, he's played more minutes and he sat out a year. So you're giving Kuminga 21 minutes a night and you expect him to be all of a sudden in year 4 this player that, and for me, the real rat on the table is many fans, and I don't even know what the Warriors want him to be or what they think that he should be. Wrong sound effect. Hang in there, big guy. There'll be brighter days ahead.
Actually, no sound effect was, I think, what you were going
for. No, we were looking for the which is the rat on the table.
Oh.
The rat on the table is maybe fans want him to be a player that I don't believe he's going to be.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
He's 1-for-9 from 3.
Yeah.
And if you look at his 3-point percentage for his career, it is 33%. 40%. Do you really think that he's ever going to be a 38 or 39% or a 40% shooter? I don't.
No, no, he's not. But let's go around the league then and talk about how many players are not the, but a central figure in the scoring process of their team and can't shoot threes. I got Giannis, end of story.
I'm looking at his draft class.
Okay.
Scotty Barnes, 19 a game for Toronto. He shoots 31% from three. He's a 6'7" wing. So there's another guy who is...
But what's the usage? How many threes a game is he shooting?
I'll have to look that up, because he shoots the ball a lot and he plays a lot.
There's two types of three-point shooters. I don't even really care about his percentage. You threw out numbers that are like the elite three-point shooters. I don't need him to be elite. But the shot right now, he's also getting shots that the rest of the NBA doesn't get, because he's getting the Draymond three. He's getting the, I'm out at the three-point line and everyone leaves. He's getting the, I could probably get a snack. GP2 could get me a truly, and I'm still going to be open when he gets back. And he still can't make those. And so if that's the case, then you need to adjust and become a different kind of player. Again, I'm not killing his career, but to me, the thought is, from a lot of Warrior fans and the organization, they want to know if this guy can be at least a number two scorer on a team. Can this guy be 19, 20, 21 a night, your number two scorer in the NBA? I don't believe that he can do that with the shooting looks and percentage that he has.
Well, that's Scotty Barnes is that player, and he's 2 of 11 this year, so he shoots about the same amount of threes. He's basically not a three-point shooter, and he gets you 19 a night, and he does it by attacking, mid-range, finishing, and the rest of it. So, for me, it just comes down to what you think that Jonathan Kuminga should be or what you want him to be, because for me, he's not ever going to be Andrew Wiggins, a guy who can shoot the three. Wiggins can score at all three levels. Kuminga, I don't think, will ever be able to score at all three levels. At the basket, yes. Mid-range, off the dribble, yes. Mm-hmm. Three-point shooter, no.
You sure?
I believe he can be that.
He shows
signs of it now
again,
at 21.
I would say it this way. If you want to battle back about the three-pointer, this would be my rebuttal. Jonathan Kuminga does very well when the shot is set up for him. He does not do very well when he's setting it up for himself. I don't think he does very well at the second level when he's creating his own shot. I don't even think he does very well attacking the basket when he's creating his own shot. What he's great at is a finisher. He's great on the break. He's great flying through the lane, receiving a pass. All of that is good. But attacking the rim and having an idea of how you want to attack the rim, then if you're getting fouled, are you knocking down your free throw shots? All of these things are getting better. Just for my taste, they're not getting better fast enough. That's just how I feel about what I see right now.
Yeah, the whole idea about fast enough is interesting, because this is it for him. This is his last year under contract.
That's what I'm getting at.
Well, I mean, he's got 79 more games. So fast enough for me is fascinating, because he gets the whole year, and then either they give him a contract offer or someone else does, and then they have a choice to make.
Or he doesn't have 70-something more games because he's part of a trade.
Yeah, he's untradeable at $7 million, I think.
I don't.
That, to me, would be the ultimate sell low, which I don't think that the Warriors would do. You're going to package him with somebody else. To me, that makes very little sense, but we'll see. Maybe at that point, he's playing so well that some team would be willing to do it.
We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises, and sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Spring Water. Live City, Thrive City, getting ready for Dubs and Pelicans. Doc Pandia stops by live in person coming up next to talk about Steph's injury and more. Half hour away from another pair of tickets to a future Warrior game, and inspired by our Kuminga conversation, also ahead next hour, our top 10 players under 25 in Bay Area sports. That's all coming up next on Willard and Dibs.